Welcome to today's Case Study Museum interview, one of eight recorded for the AMM Essential Questions Program series. Over the course of this series, we're finding out how museums are faring today, 3 years after the start of the pandemic and civic unrest following George Floyd's murder. We will be chatting with eight different museums across the Midwest about what they've learned about themselves and their audiences, what changes they've made that have stuck, and what new models or approaches they have tried. These interviews are talk show style, featuring guest moderators. They're also pre-recorded so that you can listen to them when it is convenient. Listeners will have the opportunity to ask questions of our museum panelists during live Q&A sessions this spring. So stay tuned for more. Today's interviewers are Jen Edginton, Director of Interpretation at the Illinois State Museum, and a doctoral candidate in First Nations Education at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. And also Sarah Phelan, Director and Curator at West Chicago City Museum and the Warrenville Historical Museum and Art Gallery. Jen and Sarah, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Thanks, Charity. Well, we're really excited to be here speaking with the Putnam Museum in Davenport, Iowa. And I think we'd like to start by asking you all to introduce yourself.
You bet. I'm Rachel Mullins, and I'm President and CEO of the Putnam Museum and Science Center.
Hi, I'm Kelly Lau. I'm the Vice President of Museum Experiences here at the Putnam Museum and Science Center.
Hi, and I'm Ryan Sattler. I'm the Board Chair and CEO of the Friends of MLK, a nonprofit entity here in Davenport, Iowa.
Wonderful. Well, we're so happy to have you all. And I think it's also important that Ryan is with us today, too, as a community and partner member, because I think that's a really exciting thing to introduce into this discussion. It's great.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to take over for Sarah for a minute, and we're going to kick things off. So we're asking every museum that we talk to in this series about what they learned in the last few years and what their new normal looks and feels like. So one of the first questions we want to start with is, did the pandemic present an opportunity to let go or rethink aspects of museum operations or programming that wasn't really working for you anymore? Would you mind sharing a few examples of that?
Sure. I think we're like museums across the world, probably, but certainly across the nation, that really during that shutdown time, we're kind of reflecting on what's working, what's not working. We immediately tackled some facility concerns. We really kind of rethought the visitor experience and the footprint of the museum so that when we reopened, we had separated a group entrance from a daily visitor entrance that made it a lot more accessible, a lot more tailored to individual visitor interests so that the visitor experience was very changed, and that was a good thing. We also, as we rebuilt staff, we're really looking at more of a kind of a cross-functionality as an organization so that we can kind of remain adaptable and flexible. I guess that's kind of our new normal, is that we've had to be really responsive, and we're still very much living in kind of that period of grace and working very closely with our community and that heightened level of responsiveness and responsibility in the community.
Thanks. I think that's so important to highlight that and to show that there was need for change and there's need to stay flexible. You never know when another pivot might come along. Ryan, as a partner out in the community, have you seen a shift in the Putnam over throughout these last couple years?
You know, it's been interesting for me because we got involved from a community standpoint before the pandemic. I think it has shifted a little. The beauty of the pandemic, if there is any beauty in it, is that it allowed us to meet in ways like this through Zoom that we could carry on and continue the conversations. So I think that was probably one of the shifts in busy schedules for everyone.
Yeah. Ryan's been a long time partner with the Putnam, and actually was very involved with the Putnam in prior years, including as a discussion circle leader when we hosted an exhibit called Race, Are We So Different? And I will say that that work was very much underway. And Ryan, I think you'd agree that work was really underway in 2019. And so the need to be able to keep momentum and stay, you know, moving forward and connected during that time was really, really important as we look to how do we continue that work in building relevancy and kind of the collective responsibility that we have in, across our community. So it's been an exciting time for us.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that that's the points about Zoom being able to connect people that you may have not been able to reach before is something a lot of museums felt during the pandemic. And then hopefully some are continuing because it did bring a new audience to so many different institutions. Did you feel that that was the case for you all at Putnam?
Yeah, I mean, we very much expanded our digital content and we're hearing from people from all over the country that we're using that content. Kelly, do you want to talk a little bit about the virtual streamable program, some of the portable options that we had available?
Definitely with our educational resources, we really saw a need in the community and at large to help kids that were going through this experience with their learning and their education and the turmoil that schools were trying to figure out what to do. And we were trying to figure out how to help them and assist them and giving that kind of museum aspect still, that's still really important to experiential learning. So we were able to develop online content, different kits and experiences that you could take home, and different just ways to connect to students virtually that teachers could take advantage of, whether they were teaching a Zoom class or they just weren't able to have busing or other needs that brought them here at the Putnam. So we continue to offer those. We had one of our flagship programs, Immerse, where teachers come to the Putnam and teach their class using our resources here at the building. We're able to do that virtually as well and create packets that are still being used today.
Yeah, that portable content has been really popular. I will say as families and educators are coming back, it's kind of a split. Many of them really are wanting to resist the screen time, you know, now that they're back, but they love the customization and the tailoring of, we did backpack programs that were activity kits that were going out to families and schools and some of our after-school providers. And, you know, I think what we realized during that time is that parents were becoming very sophisticated kind of consumers on behalf of their kids and cultivating learning opportunities and expanding content, extended, you know, experiential learning because they were taking on more and more of that role of educator. And that has stuck, I'd say. I think families and parents and even the teachers are coming to the museum with sort of a heightened want for customization and hands-on learning. We have a savvier consumer, I'd say, after the pandemic when it comes to extended learning.
I think that's such a great opportunity that museums, yeah. Some museums have been able to jump in and fill, and that engagement, which hopefully strengthens work with communities going forward. But Rachel, you had kind of started to back us up pre-March of 2020, and we'd like to go back to 2019 when you hosted the Race, Are We So Different exhibit from the Science Museum of Minnesota, and how that was really the catalyst for you all to make a shift in your mission. Could you talk to us a little bit about that and what drove you from that exhibit to make the shift that you all have made?
Yeah, I'd say the Putnam really has been on this journey for probably over a decade of reaching out into the community and, you know, looking at the role of the modern museum beyond kind of the repository and preservation role and telling stories around our civil rights history and wonderful exhibit called Mi Casa Nueva that was about our Hispanic heritage, the Jewish experience in the Quad Cities. And so that was all really leading up to and building partnerships across the community so that when the time came and Ryan was a part of this, actually it preceded Kelly and I even coming to the Putnam, we hosted the exhibit out of Science Museum Minnesota and the American Anthropological Association called Race, Are We So Different? And it, Ryan, I mean, it brought these discussion circles and it was just this wonderful opportunity. I think I was there as a consumer from the public schools perspective for dialogue, right? I think it changed the course for us.
If I could speak to a little bit of the history of, I think, communities of ethnic communities and cultures, I think one of the beautiful pieces of that exhibit, and I think the time that we spent leading up to bringing the exhibit to do it correctly, is the Putnam leadership decided to engage the community prior to the exhibit coming to make sure that it was embraced in the community, and that we had ample conversations that would lead us to growth. And so I appreciate the caution and the careful approach that the leadership team took, because I was only one of the community partners, a part of leading kind of discussion circles after groups of individuals visited the exhibit. And so it was, to me, that definitely was a catalyst. And I can't speak to the leadership's, the Putnam's leadership in terms of their mission, focus, change, and shift. But I can speak to the fact that as a member of the community, I definitely felt embraced because of it. And others who were a part of that team and decision-making felt the same as I.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, one of those turning points. You know, you look back over the arc of your history as an organization, and I think that moment was a new level of community engagement for the Putnam. But it also, I think, helped us understand the role of museums as conveners and, you know, to host these important dialogues in our community. And what does that look like beyond a traveling exhibit? You know, how does that really impact who we are? And so you mentioned the mission statement. It was actually our museum assessment program audit and some of that work that we were doing in 2019. It was actually through the Association of Midwest Museums that we decided to really engage in a planning process around this idea of community engagement. Because prior to that, you know, community engagement was, well, who's coming? You know, how, registration for summer camps and, you know, who's visiting the museum. Like, we really, I think, race and some of that work of co-curation that our curators are doing helped us understand there's this whole aspect of community engagement that really needs to be a part of our everyday in the museum and how we decision make. And so the race exhibit was that moment to say, okay, we're going in. And we did a full-on museum assessment program audit, and it provided that continuous improvement tool for us. It was deep reflection and engagement, you know, across a variety of stakeholders, but also, you know, staff and leadership all the way to the board level to say, you know, who's missing from this process? You know, still as much work as we had already done at that time, who is missing? And how do we engage them in this process? And from that, then the board embraced a new mission statement. Our mission at the time, I think, really was reflective of what we did. This idea of preserve, educate, and connect. But I think the board and our stakeholders were ready for a more articulated vision of why that work matters in our community. Which is how the resulting mission statement came to be through a pretty broad process across the community of looking at, you know, why this work matters, actually using the Simon Sinek framework. It starts with why. You're probably familiar with that. We used that process actually to develop kind of why statements and a vocabulary of value statements and motivations, and that ultimately became our new mission statement. So it's a lot closer to the impact we think we have in the community.
I love that a mission statement can be rooted in impact versus kind of the nuts and bolts of what a museum does, right? I really love that. And I have the mission statement in front of me. And so I just want to like touch on it because I just think it is very impactful and you can see it. So we have that the mission is to bring to life a sense of place, time, and purpose to ignite human potential and inspire our diverse communities to learn about and care for our world and all its people. Holy cow. Like, that's so great. I think that it's one of those things that we often in museums hear a lot of how we want to be a certain way. We want to be more inclusive. We want to be more accessible. We want to root our work in equity. But to create a mission statement that really is making it transparent, your advocacy work for ensuring inclusion and equity is really important. So we've heard a little bit about what prompted the revision. And we heard a little bit about kind of the 2019 and also some changes during the pandemic. But how are you currently living your mission statement? And that would include all staff. How is all of our staff working together or other organizations and the organization as a whole? How is this mission statement becoming a living, breathing thing instead of just something that sometimes mission statements become, right? Something on the wall. But it seems like you all have made this transition to ensure that this is rooted in your work.
Yeah, there's some really great examples too from our master plan, including our World Culture Gallery work that's already been completed. Through that, we are able to not only utilize our building in a more effective way, but also find a space where our co-curating and our community outreach really was thriving. We have had multiple exhibits where we represent different cultures by inviting people in to curate their own story and their own representation of how that should look in the museum. It has been a place that is a gorgeous space that is inclusive of different stories. We have a West African exhibit, Akwaba, which means welcome right now. And we have lots of different ideas and plans of trying to reach out to different community groups to utilize the space with multiple co-curators in the future. But then also these relationships that have been formulated in the past with friends of Martin Luther King, our friends at the LULAC, United Way, different groups all throughout our really those relationships are still coming to fruition, still being developed and implemented through our regional history update. And in that work, our main kind of exhibit that was the history of the Quad Cities, a timeline that take you through things that happened was it's about 40 years old and left out a lot of stories and a lot of highlights from different communities that are really important to our area. So the time and the process that we talked about with race in 2019 was also implemented during this rethinking of how to represent our region through meeting at libraries, doing some collecting sessions. We had using our coves, our visitor surveying. We had focus groups, we even prototyped different ideas and interactives in the gallery and got feedback from visitors that were coming through. We had bumper stickers that added new content while we were co-curating and making these connections that kind of showed what kind of stories were missing while we were still working on this process. So this regional history update not only does that through a traditional museum lens, but also utilizes a lot of oral history. Through oral histories gained over the past 10 years, even the Mi Casa Nueva storytelling oral histories that were collected. There's people who are past who we wouldn't be able to collect their stories today. So it's really important work that's been underway. The LULAC Youth Council has collected oral histories and we work with Azubuiki at Art Center to collect new stories during this whole process as well. So with our partners like Friends of MLK, LULAC, we'll have these satellite sites that can also reflect each other, not only our regional history update within our exhibit and within our walls, but also at different locations so that they kind of refer to each other and provide this continual relationship throughout the community.
That was another important outcome, I think, from the work with the race exhibit. So it was that moment at the Putnam to kind of look inward and say, this exhibit does not represent our community. And imagine that impact of school children walking through this exhibit and not seeing themselves present in their community, in the fabric of the community. So that was an immediate need coming out of the race exhibit, and a great opportunity for continuity with those partners then to continue that work to say, let's look at this through the lens of equity and inclusion and representation and relevancy, but do it in this regional history exhibit. And it was recognized by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, the only grant actually in the state of Iowa, and Science Museum Minnesota continued with us. Our partners from the race exhibit continued with us to say, what is this like in a local history exhibit? Because these little gems are across the country, these sort of aging, outdated exhibits that don't reflect the community of the current day. So it was really important work for us. If we're going to aspire to this mission and open hearts to that mission, is that we've got to address the relevancy and the representation of what we're offering our community.
That's such a powerful statement. And, you know, when you speak, especially to that, the school children, you know, when the school, their first insight into what a museum is, if they don't see themselves, we know the ripple effect of them, what that will mean for their attitude to museums for the rest of their life. So that's so important. I wonder if you would talk about, you know, was this an easy process? I think Jen and I,
Ryan, was it easy?
So we know. Can you talk to any of us about any of those sticky points? Or, you know, I loved how Kelly mentioned, you know, kind of prototyping some of the interactives and learning from it. Museums are sometimes afraid to fail, and it sounds like you all were putting yourselves out there in multiple ways. Can you talk to us about any of the learning processes you had from maybe some of the stickier times? And I would throw that to Ryan as well, as a community member, as he negotiated this too.
I'll start. And some of the sticky pieces, again, has been from a historical lens of, in particular, the African-American community in systems. So not just the Putnam and museum systems, but systems in general, as we saw from the fallout, I guess, and the shifting that took place after George Floyd. It was really systems that people have learned to distrust. And so I think being a member of the African-American community and a member of this charge with the Putnam, myself, as long as with a few others, as Kelly mentioned, as in Blukey, African-American Council for the Arts, bringing the Black community on board to say, no, there are some pieces. The Putnam is they're really digging down and want our history on display. And this is a place where our history can be preserved. There's so much that has been lost. In this area in particular, there's been some decent collection of history of our Native Indigenous community, as well as the Hispanic, or in particular the Mexican American community, and the migration is beautiful that the Putnam has had. I'm not sure what year, but that's been on display, and some of that research has been done, but very limited on the African American history and that being on display. And so that was probably the and has been and continues to be, I'll say, some of the roughest patches for me in this process, is convincing the Black or African-American community to trust the process here that we have going.
It's also been a period of incredible personal growth, I think, for us individually. I know, coming from a public schools perspective and that want, you know, to serve community and engage youth and help them see themselves as a part of their community. I didn't realize how much of my own privilege and, you know, naivete and just growth opportunities I would be encountering through this work. I mean, that discussion of systems and trust is, you know, we had a moment actually with community partners, right? I was pulled in on this as well, is that, you know, we were sort of looking at validating stories, and there was a lot of sort of civil rights history in our community and different opinions about how it went down and what happened. And one of our staffers refers to kind of the Quad City Times and some of the like journals and the documentation of the time, and not realizing that there's a true distrust in the African-American community about systems and how things were reported at the time. And so even the resources that we use and, you know, some of those assumptions that we make as museum professionals, we have to consider the bridge that creates or tears down in the community that we're serving, the language that we're choosing, the political divide that's in place right now in our work to identify contemporary history in the vocabulary that we're choosing. And, you know, we went through it in 2021 in just how we were defining January 6th and the use of the word insurrection, and whether that word would be accepted by our community. You know, we went forward, you know, with truth. You know, it's been difficult to find language that creates an opportunity for dialogue without deepening the divides in our community.
Yeah, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing that. I'm not going to speak for Sarah, but a lot of our work, we have found each other through social justice and equity work together. And in particular, myself being a Latina in museums, I don't see myself represented in a lot of museums that I go to. However, when you do it and you do it well, there then all of a sudden becomes a new audience that is ready to be at your door and ready to welcome kind of these changes. So have you, I know you talked a little bit about that trust building within the communities themselves. You mentioned getting outside the museum and having some listening sessions, but is there anything else that you would recommend that was really successful in building that trust? Because museums haven't always been great to people from historically excluded identities. And in particular, we know Indigenous communities. We also know that some museums aren't ready for the pushback that some of those more inclusive exhibits or inclusive experiences have, especially smaller museums. So can you talk a little bit about that trust building activities that you did, or trust building exercises, that got people from those communities into your space and working with you?
That's interesting. You know, I have to say, I think it was based on existing relationships. That's a part of the trust, is that this is not episodic. It's not opportunistic. It's not trendy because this is the dialogue right now. It's that there's been this long evolving relationship that's built on authenticity and friendship. We just enjoy each other. And so there's a social aspect to that as well. I resist the term exercises, I guess. I don't know. I just, you know, I worry sometimes that we just dive in on conversations without understanding really the depth of the emotion and have a skill set to work through that with some of those. And I, you know, what's more important, I think, is that there is an authentic relationship in place as you're encountering this work. That history, I think, is what has made this successful.
If I could also speak to, again, just going back, I think having the race exhibit, we started, I believe I was in, started being engaged in those conversations that they were looking at doing this in 2017, and we worked all the way through 2018, to bring this on. And so, the members of the community that were part of it, we were shifting the landscape at that time. We didn't feel like it. We didn't realize what we were doing, that we would be at this stage here when we were doing that. we didn't know a pandemic was going to be upon us. We didn't know that the world would shift and that we would see social justice movements all over the world due to what we witnessed on our screens with George Floyd. And so, but as Rachel talks about the relationships that were established in the community, I think through, again, those facilitated discussions that we had with that, there was this call after the race exhibit for us. What are we going to do next? Now that we've had this knowledge imparted upon us and shared, what are we going to do? And I was very adamant that it wasn't the Putnam's job. It was to carry on the conversations. That was the community's job, to carry on the conversations. I think the Putnam has done an excellent job, although, of carrying on the conversation through the collaborative work that they've continued to engage in. And I think that's important when breaking down barriers of distrust. Are you consistent and persistent in the work? And I think the vantage for the Putnam has been that, as Rachel's talking about, we are friends, and we do enjoy working with each other as well as with our League of United Latin American Citizens and Embrace World Relief and others in this work. It does become less like work and more like this is mission driven stuff. This is a higher calling that we're doing this work, and we're preserving our collective history in this. And so I think I also resist the term exercises. I understand. I know what you mean, but it's less exercises than it's what we do, because we see the importance in this work of preserving our history and bringing our communities on one accord. And I think our shared history is one great way to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it will continue, because this exhibit is designed to continue to grow. We know we don't have everything that we could represent right now on opening day. We don't have all of the stories that could be collected, and we're living history every single day. So continuing to build trust with new generations that they can share their story, that the things that they have are important enough to be in this Putnam collection, continuing that work and making your exhibit and your programming adaptable so that it can grow and it can be representative, and someone doesn't come in 40 years later and is like, oh my gosh, this is locked in time and doesn't talk about what we're experiencing and has no relevance to us anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the work of this and other, master plan projects that we have coming forward. If we don't have a relationship where people see themselves and see a way to do that we make it possible. We have a story booth where it can make it possible to collect stories in the moment. Future projects allow us to identify holes in our collection, identify holes where people can say, oh, I was looking for an artifact about this and it's not in your collection. And we can connect to them and be and better make our collection more representative. And whether it be digital oral histories or actual physical objects too. So it's a continual process. It's not by any means done after the regional history update is technically open. So
thanks for taking us there, Kelly, because actually that's where my mind was kind of going about. We saw a lot of statements in June of 2020. We saw a lot of DEI hires. We saw a lot of language that was kind of on a homepage, but has somehow gone away from the museum's focus. So it is building in those systems, back, Ryan, to what you were saying about the distrust of deep systemic racism that we know exists in the foundation of museums, in the foundation of our country. So, could you talk to us a little bit about, I think that's great, Kelly, that you have, it's in the master plan, there are some systems in place, but how are you working through accountability? I think that's the one piece that we see missing sometimes in these projects of, museums know wonderfully how to represent reports of visitation and outreach events, but we don't always know how to actually show how these things are actually impacting communities. I mean, your mission, I love how Jen said, it's rooted in impact. That's a great way to say it. It really is. But how do you have accountability metrics for that? How do you have structures to report on what you're actually making a difference in?
So one of the outcomes of the Museum Assessment Program audit was that we came to understand that we really don't know enough about our audiences. You know, we had zip code reports and we had head counts and, you know, through that process, we identified a partnership out of Boston Children's Museum that's a collaborative for ongoing visitor experience surveying. And I don't know if you're, it's about probably about 50 institutions across the nation are part of this COVES partnership. And it is museum-based surveying that occurs. And we're able to tailor some of that question. So you have benchmarking across different Midwestern museums of our size so that we're able to see comparison data of who's coming, who's missing. But then also we're able to tailor some of those questions around, did you feel welcome? Was the content relevant? You know, there's a lot of the mission that we are able to get at through questions in the surveying, as well as kind of deepening our program evaluation. We have a wonderful program that's kind of an outcome of the World Culture Gallery opening. It's a partnership with our English language learners through our local schools. And we have kids in the museum after school every day coming to the museum and learning about their culture, but also their expertise on their culture and sharing that in the community, preparing them for knowledge about their new community, but also career opportunities. And so there's evaluation tools and things that are built in to that on, you know, how are we igniting potential? Are they changing their sense of their future self? Do they feel more confident in their decision-making, in their language skills, in this vocabulary-rich environment? So we're able to do a program evaluation as well that starts to get at some of the aspirational tones, I guess, of the mission statement. It's an interesting challenge. We've had this discussion before about how do you measure igniting human potential? Wow, you know, that's pretty big. But there's actually research base around that work starting with just these sparks of inspiration and curiosity. And those are things we can measure, you know, and then eventually, ideally, get to the longitudinal data around whether that's impacted, you know, decision making and in more rigorous coursework at high school, you know, graduation attainment, career aspirations. We have it anecdotally. We have the, you know, we had a contractor we were working with, and he's in construction trades, project management, good career. And he started at a Battle of the Bridges event at the Putnam when he was in high school, making popsicle stick bridges. I think we all have those anecdotal stories, but how do you measure and articulate that is the challenge.
Thank you all so much. We just have a few more questions, a little bit more time. And some of this has been touched on throughout our conversation, because it really has taken us into amazing places and to learn more about the Putnam. But we recognize from what you all are saying that community engagement is centric to what you're doing and to your new mission statement. And so really, we've heard a little bit about what it was before the assessment and what it looks like after. So what does community engagement really mean to you now versus before you went through this assessment? And what has it looked like in practice? So we've heard little bits and pieces, but I'd love to get a little deeper with this. And Ryan, we welcome you to join the conversation and talk about how your organizations have worked together as you work through that mission statement.
Yeah, I do think that the map allowed us to take a real deep dive in forming a demographics committee. And then we did a COVE survey, and then, you know, our accessibility committee and work with the Center for Independent Living in our community to come in and work with us. And so that idea of community engagement as not just participation, but as true co-creation, co-leadership in the space and in the programming, I think is what the map has brought us to. And the regional history exhibit is a great example of that. The relationship with Friends of Martin Luther King and how this work has extended, not just at the Putnam, but in the work going on at the Interpretive Center and the extraordinary facility work they have coming up, right? And we'd love to share some of the great news of what's happening at the center as well.
Yeah. Before I talk about the center, I like to kind of address, really, because that's a part of the my response to your question of how this is kind of gone. And I think that co-creation, co-leadership that Rachel, I love that, because that's how I've felt. And so again, so along with the Friends of MLK, LULAC, Asambuki, we've partnered with the Putnam and really enhancing this view of different ethnicities and cultures. I think we applied for a grant, a local grant together, a United Way grant, United for Equity. And out of that grant came some really, really neat work as we look at enhancing the work there and what's on display at the Putnam, but restorative justice sessions that were led by Asambuke, Council for the Arts. My organization did some community training on the trauma of race and racism, what that means. We've had curriculum come out of this. And so we have five lessons that was introduced into our community school district of Latin American, mainly Hispanic or Mexican American history. Migration is beautiful. Migration into the Davenport, into Iowa and the Davenport area in particular. This year we introduced African American history into Davenport schools, and it's five lessons of that, which takes us through what, you know, the third graders through what they know about African Americans. We were adamant that we had to start before slavery, because African American history doesn't start with slavery, but it moves and passes through slavery into where we are. And working with the University of Iowa Women's Archive Center as a partner in this as well. And so I'll say the collaboration, the collaborative spirit, the co-leadership, the co-creation of these materials has been, I think, the beauty in all of this work that we've been able to do. One of the components, we started having questions or conversations back in 2014, 2015 that I got involved in from a Friends of MLK, and how do we commemorate Dr. King, the life and legacy of Dr. King, is how my organization really started from the mayor at that time. And we ended up landing on a site that we believe was Davenport, Iowa's first Black business, who was a gentleman who was a former slave out of Missouri who owned a business, and come to find out he was actually pretty wealthy from the late 1860s through he passed away in 1913, and had, by the time he had, his business had moved to three different locations and probably had three or four different businesses at the time, and oftentimes running at the same time. And so to tell these stories, to be able to tell these stories, like, oh my gosh, we have to tell these. And so we landed on really doing a deep dive into the Black or African-American history of this particular area, in particular Davenport. And so while we will be sharing our stories with the Putnam, we're going to lead people to the Putnam from our location, and the Putnam will lead people from the Putnam to our location as tourist sites. And so it's still this collaborative effort that we have. We're not preserving artifacts and as a nonprofit. I'm happy to be a partner with the Putnam so that they can do those things. They are more equipped with that. And then we can kind of help, again, bridge the gaps with information that so much of our history, not just African-American history, but our history in general, is in our landfills and just lost photos and other things. And so how do we begin to raise the conscience of those in our community to donate those? Let's preserve those records. And so that has been kind of some of the best conversations I've had in the community with some of our community partners as we're doing these oral histories and leading into these group conversations about our African-American history and what people know and can recall.
Mm-hmm. There's been some great work. Also, I think, you know, our community is embracing this work, and we were asked, actually, the Downtown Partnership is kind of looking at how are they supporting this work to tell the story of Black-owned businesses at that time in history, which was just remarkable in our community. And so that idea of marrying these personal accounts and stories coming from families with documentation and historic record, you know, has become, I think, a really nice place for museums to support and engage and help with co-creation outside of our doors as well. Now, in the relationship with the Friends of Martin Luther King, we're the partner. You know, we're the ones trying to support the work that they're doing because we have this shared mission and this alignment with, you know, projects coming out of that extraordinary historic neighborhood that the Interpretive Center sits in, that is really an icon of Black history in Iowa. Extraordinary.
So the park itself will tell the story of Black history, but it also tell the collective story of ethnic and cultural history. What we know and we've discovered is even more evident is it's impossible to tell a certain race or ethnic history without really telling a more comprehensive story. It's been done, but we don't want to do that at our in our center. And I'm grateful again with partners like Rachel and the Putnam, is that they're shifting that thought as well. Is that it's impossible. It should have been impossible for us to tell a singular ethnic story without any mention or impact, positive impact of other ethnicities engaged in that. And so I think that's really the beauty of this. We're really had this opportunity to tell a wonderful Davenport civil rights story, African-American story, Mexican-American story, and really talk about how, like, the German community and the abolitionists in this community, the Underground Railroad, and how those things that took place in this area as a collective piece.
And now we have these extraordinary relationships and this body of knowledge and resources as we continue the work in other facets at the Putnam. So the next project after the regional history update is an exhibit called Quad City Innovators. And, you know, we know we have to step outside the German engineers that our community is so famous for. You know, we really have to look across our entire community when we talk about the story of us, who is us, and making sure that those stories are represented. So to be able to feature some of the innovators of that time period that the Friends of Martin Luther King has really researched and documented so carefully as a part of sharing this legacy of innovation with the next generation, that these kids, they see these role models, they see the success stories. We all come to understand the contributions and the struggles of cultures other than ours, but also that we're able to celebrate those contributions. Celebrate our own heritage as well.
So exciting, y'all. Like, my Mexican family immigrated to the Quad Cities. So, like, this is such a beautiful tie-in. Yeah, beautiful tie-in.
Very good.
Like, I'm going to quiz my dad about, I'm sure he visited the Putnam when he was in school. So, like, I can't wait to quiz him when I get off this call.
Now we're gonna rope you in for some storytelling and some objects. And yeah.
I'm like,
our relationship with school districts across, you know, 20 counties, our relationship with families, every child in the region at some point is going to have this opportunity to experience the Putnam. So that's an extraordinary opportunity, but a real responsibility that everyone feels represented in that work. Not just because we want that to be relevant and they see themselves at the Putnam, but that they understand their role in our broader community and in the future of our community, that we're all, you know, important members of that collective.
So inspiring. And I love the discussion of reciprocity and, you know, prioritizing and sharing that balance. Like, it's really amazing. I think Jen and I could both also maybe be labeled as people who kind of bury in passion and, you know, overtake, which I think, you know, just hearing your stories, like I'm just like thinking of through, like, as a museum director, what I would shift priorities away from. But I'd love, you know, in our last few minutes, could you speak to us? I think right now is such an interesting time for museums as we find great relationships in the community, and there's so much excitement about it, and we want to do so much, but we have to find balance. You know, museums have not always been good at balancing things for our staff, making sure that, you know, when we have these amazing opportunities, we are intentional and we take it slow so we don't overly tax a partner or we don't overly tax staff. You're doing such amazing work, but how are you finding balance in this work? And as you look forward to make sure that this can be sustainable, that, you know, this is something that's a really wonderful natural process.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, that's my advice, is to start with a museum assessment program audit, because it does provide you a bit of a map, and it also engages your staff and your stakeholders in that prioritization. So it has this sort of consensus process built in, that they're a part of developing that vision. The Putnam, like many museums, has a huge turnover of staff. 2/3 of our staff were not with us when we were required to close our doors in 2020. So, you know, they've been a part of resetting the culture and prioritizing this work. So out of the museum assessment program, we developed a relevancy framework that was a list of strategies that, you know, staff had consensus on. This is what we value. This is where our priorities and our focus are. And that drove right into strategic planning. So, you know, this work is articulated in work plans. It is resourced and reflected in our budget. You know, that all of these tools sort of wrap around this priority of truly implementing this mission with authenticity. So those tools help. It's wonderful to have opportunities like this and talk about all the great work going on and, you know, showing some of the outcomes and the beautiful imagery of people engaging. But underpinning all of that are these really important tools that are reflected in work plans and in budgets. That's the reality of the museum world.
Can I just share that? I think so. The tagline. So I'm not on the Putnam's payroll. I'm not on their board or anything. But but I really love their tagline is "You belong here." And I think that speaks to this. And so I share this quote by Brian Stevenson. He's the executive director of the Equal Justice Institute. He says, "I don't do what I do because I have to, but I do what I do because I realize that I'm broken too." And I think if we come from this place of brokenness, that we understand that there's some brokenness in us personally, individually, in our society, in the systems, and wherever we're working, that it brings a different type of passion to the work. And so as a partner, putting in the time to do things like this for the Putnam and to be engaged in conversations, I'm realizing that it's a part therapy for me. It's fixing some brokenness, right? And so I think it, again, so it's identifying in this DEI world of inclusion and inclusiveness. It's about feeling included, knowing that you are a part of the process, the collaborative process, and it's not just tokenism, that you have someone on your board that is of color, or you have someone a different gender, whatever it may be, but you're actually engaging the person, and the person feels welcome and inclusive. And I think when that tagline, "You belong here," I'm not saying that we're all there, but we're on a journey to feeling like everyone that walks in belongs in our facilities. And I think that's mm-hmm. a beautiful place to be.
That's the beloved community, right? Right.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I remember early conversations with Ryan about the story of Dr. King, and I grew up loving the Quad Cities and not realizing the incredible privilege that I had through that love and loyalty to the community. That a part of loving your community is understanding that you have to work toward equality and access and inclusion. And to move from a loved community to a beloved community is what this work is about, because ultimately that's what's going to serve the future generations.
Wow. Thank you so, so much for joining Sarah and myself and for doing the work that you're doing. Thank you so much. We truly appreciate you taking time out and talking to us, all of you. Ryan, it was so nice to have you. And Kelly and Rachel, it was so lovely to be in the space with all of you. And Sarah is always my thought partner. Thank you for being here with us. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Yes, thank you all.
Thank you so much for having us. Mm-hmm.